From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 1 month ago in Afghanistan with the publication of new laws regarding the conduct of women and girls. The Taliban announced that women can no longer speak outside of their homes in public. It's part of a long list of new laws governing personal conduct. Here's how the Associated Press reported it. Quote, Afghanistan's Taliban rulers have issued a ban on women's voices and bare faces in public under new laws approved by the Supreme Leader in efforts to combat vice and promote virtue. According to the new laws, women must veil themselves in front of all male strangers, including Muslims, and in front of all non-Muslims to avoid being corrupted. A woman's voice is deemed intimate and so should not be heard singing, reciting, speaking, or reading aloud in public. It is forbidden for women to look at men they are not related to by blood or marriage. End quote. Now, you might recall that in 2021, the Taliban's leaders promised to be different this time around. Taliban 2.0, you might say. More liberalized, more open to women working and going to school. Almost no one believed it. And now we have plenty of confirmation that the Taliban is the Taliban, creating misery for girls and women and oppression for all of its population. In the past 3 years, the United States government has worked to identify and assist Afghans who qualify in the SIV program. It stands for Special Immigrant Visas. Critics say that the federal government has moved too slowly, that it should have had a better plan for SIVs when the country was collapsing 3 years ago. After all, this is not a new program. It's been going on for years. And why has it moved so slowly, the critics have said. Today, there are thousands of Afghans who assisted the American military and are stuck in Afghanistan, threatened by the Taliban with retribution. The SIV program is a way of honoring their sacrifice and the risks they took in helping Americans by interpreting and translating and more. But a new critic has emerged of the program. It's the vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party. Senator J.D. Vance said, both in a podcast and in recent rallies, that we should be significantly limiting any SIV offers. Vance mocked Afghans applying for SIVs, saying that many are just lying about helping the Americans. He claimed without evidence that many Afghan interpreters duped Americans and were actually helping the Taliban. And he said that for the Afghans who did help us, we should do something for them, but not necessarily bring them here to this country. He didn't specify how to provide assistance. He amplified those comments last month in a visit to Pennsylvania. He said, quote, just because they allegedly helped us doesn't mean you have to let them come to Pittsburgh. Maybe some of them should go to other countries. Maybe we could help some of them in their own country. End quote. Writing for The Bulwark, Will Selber says that this is a betrayal of people who served our cause. Selber is a retired Middle East foreign area officer with 20 years in the intelligence community and 4 years of service in Afghanistan and Iraq. He writes, quote, J.D. Vance may not think Afghan interpreters deserve to be trusted, but they have proved themselves. The question is why they think America should be trusted. Will a future Trump-Vance administration guarantee the continuation of America's SIV program? I fear not. End quote. Connections listeners know that there is a vibrant and growing SIV community in our region. And we've met many on this program over the years. Let's talk about where that program is and where it might go next. And let me say from the outset of this program, our guests, particularly Alan Smith, who we're going to say hello to in a moment, the executive director of Keeping Our Promise, they're not partisans on these issues. You have heard them for years on this program, at times praising Republicans and praising Democrats, at times very critical of Democrats, at times very critical of Republicans. It is all about how the program is working or not working. It is not about what team politically someone is on. So in that lens, I just want you to understand, we're going to be talking about and listening to some specific comments from one of the candidates in the current race, but this is not a group of guests today who are partisans. Ellen Smith, executive director of Keeping Our Promise. Welcome back. Thank you for
being here. Hi, Evan. Thank you for having us again.
Welcome to Sean Kellis, a board member for Keeping Our Promise. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Nick Stefanovich is a veteran, director of veteran services for Monroe County and also a board member for KOP. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
And welcome to Mahbubullah Amirzai, who is an Afghan native and came to the Rochester area on an SIV, a special immigrant visa. Mahbubullah, thank you for making time.
Thank you very much.
Ellen, before I listen to J.D. Vance's comments, do you want to just amplify the point? I'm not trying to run interference for you. I'm trying to tell our listeners, my experience with you has never been in any partisan context. I don't expect that to change today.
No, I'm critical of everyone.
I have noticed that. And at times, you know, you'll offer praise where you think people deserve it.
Right. But, you know,
mostly criticism.
there's blame to go all around.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from you over the years. Okay, yes. So in that spirit, I want to listen to some of the comments J.D. Vance made on a podcast about the idea that there are still thousands of Afghans who served as translators and interpreters, and they are essentially stuck in Afghanistan in either a very slow process or fearing for their lives, and that we have a duty to help them. Here's what he said.
Afghanistan is a country of translators and interpreters because every single person that's coming in, that's what they say, is this person is a translator and interpreter. Well, first of all, again, this is the fraudulence of our elites. You talk to people who served in Afghanistan, and one of the things they will tell you is, yeah, a lot of the translators and interpreters who helped us were great guys. We would love to help them. Don't necessarily need to bring them to the United States, but we want to help them. But also, a lot of the interpreters who said they were helping us were actively helping terrorists plant roadside bombs, knowing our routes.
That's J.D. Vance, and let me ask Ellen Smith what you make of those comments.
Hogwash. I mean, I have not heard, and I think perhaps, you know, Nick would be better suited to talk about this, but it's not been my experience that interpreters have planted roadside bombs. It's my experience that interpreters have been injured along with our soldiers in roadside bombs. And in terms of J.D. Vance's comment about, you know, everyone says that they were an interpreter, what we really need to realize is that there were other people that we are helping, and that's also the support personnel. And, I mean, we have resettled women under the SIV program who risk their lives every day to go maybe to Bagram Air Force Base, and they were cleaning staff. There are a lot of people that worked for and helped the U.S., not just as a combat interpreter, who we owe a duty to assist.
Let me say for listeners who are just wondering about any fact-checking, there is no evidence that I'm aware of that there was a widespread Taliban program to have their members pose as interpreters or translators and then turned around and killed many Americans.
And people have to be thoroughly vetted to work for the U.S. So that includes their social media, their Facebook pages. And we've had people not get a visa because they may have been critical. I mean, when we were withdrawing, there was a cartoon going around of Uncle Sam kicking interpreters off of a cliff, right? Well, these guys, that's how they felt. They felt like they were being pushed off of a cliff and
abandoned.
But that political cartoon might get them kicked out of, you know, any possibility of getting a special immigrant visa. I mean, all their social media, their phone records were checked, and their family members as well. So it's just we're not letting in, and nobody wants to let in a terrorist, right? No one wants another 9/11.
I don't know of one person who's come on an SIV to the United States who has done harm to the United States. I'm not trying to be flippant here. I don't know of one.
No, that's correct. That's correct.
So there isn't evidence to support what he's saying. But let me ask our other guests what you make of that. And, you know, Sean, what goes through your mind when you hear those remarks?
The same as Ellen. I mean, a bunch of hogwash. My experiences, I worked at one of the refugee camps down at Donna Ana, New Mexico, with Fort Bliss, Texas, when I was stationed in the U.S. Army back in 2021. And I was able to talk to a bunch of refugees as they came right off the plane. I was the first one they saw. I was testing them for COVID because it was back when the pandemic was still, you know, really big and awful. And I saw these people come in with nothing but the clothes on their backs. They had, you know, either it was themselves or their wives or children. And they all looked as tired. They were jet lagged, tired. And then, you know, as the refugee camp went through, the 4.5 months I think it lasted, I was able to talk to all of them, get their stories, and all of them, like the SIVs that were there that helped U.S. forces, they all had recommendation letters from, you know, U.S. military members who they had worked with in the past. And to what Senator J.D. Vance said, it's, you know, they had the proof, they had the paperwork, they came there with their family to escape, you know, the Taliban from executing their family. I talked to kids who saw their aunts and uncles executed by the Taliban because they worked with U.S. forces. The Taliban has the biological data that they need to, like, kind of track personnel in Afghanistan who helped us. And so to say that, you know, yes, they helped us, but they shouldn't come to the U.S. to escape is crazy to me is we got to keep our promise to them.
Well, that's the second part of this that we're going to be talking about is, you know, this idea that Vance is putting forward there that for those who are, in his mind, legitimate interpreters, translators, people who help the American government, he still doesn't feel that that merits bringing them to the United States, which to me is pretty clear evidence that there hasn't actually been a whole lot of distance between the Trump administration and the Biden administration on Afghanistan, despite a lot of the rhetoric here. It was during the Trump administration that Zalmay Khalilzad was an ambassador, that there were deals, Taliban members released, including some senior leadership.
That's 5,000 Taliban released.
5,000 Taliban released, yeah, during the Trump 2018, during the Trump administration. And then Mike Pompeo and others helped negotiate a deal that the Biden administration essentially kept in place. When Trump eventually left the office, one of the things he told advisors was that he wanted to pull out of Afghanistan a week before January 20th just to make a mark saying that he wanted the credit for it. And then it went very badly later that year, and now he blames Biden. But they had very similar approaches there. I'm not saying there's no distance. I'm saying that these administrations, last two, have not had a whole lot of distance. The distance is now clearly in SIVs. I haven't heard Kamala Harris talk about this. I haven't heard Tim Walz talk about this. But I don't suspect that their rhetoric would match what J.D. Vance is saying. I mean, I haven't heard anybody besides J.D. Vance say that some of the things he said about SIVs there. So I'll ask Nick if you want to weigh in on some of what you heard from Senator Vance.
Yeah, I know. I think that he's using an age-old, very common political tactic that both parties use all the time, and it's a scare tactic. And, you know, they take, 1% of an issue, and they want the people to believe that that's the entire issue, and then we have to stop everything. It's what we use on immigration. It's what we use on guns. It's what we use on almost every single political hot topic. I think another important distinction to make between J.D. Vance, I think a lot of people look at him as like, oh, here's a veteran. He must know, at least we should weigh his words more carefully. And I always hesitate to get into this, but I don't have a problem getting into it right now on this topic. J.D. Vance did not have the same experience that I had or my friends had in Afghanistan, right? We were door kickers. We took the fight to the Taliban. We raided compounds. We took detainees. We killed the Taliban. J.D. Vance was not. J.D. Vance did not have that experience. So I think it's important nuance to add to the conversation is that he's not somebody who's speaking from experience on what we think about these SIVs. I would say to you,
he was essentially a journalist,
yes,
detailing the work that his colleagues were doing.
And I think most of the time he wasn't even doing that. I think most of the time he was doing security for other journalists that were coming through Baghdad.
It's still honorable service.
Sure.
Isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I want people to understand that he's not somebody who was out fighting in the mountains of Afghanistan alongside the SIVs. And those people that did that, I would challenge anyone to find me one of us who does not think that we should bring every single one of them here to the U.S. I don't have any friends who I fought. I spent almost 2 years fighting in Afghanistan. I don't have any who think that they shouldn't all be brought here and taken care of. And to his point on were there interpreters that worked with the Taliban? Again, I'm sure if you find
some, right?
For sure. I'm sure if you talked to the CIA and they were being honest with you, they would say, yeah, we've seen evidence. But again, I think you brought up a really good point when you mentioned earlier that we have not had one incident of an Afghan SIV participating in any type of criminal activity against the U.S. And I think that speaks a lot to how our government is vetting them. And I know myself, Ellen and I, I've seen cases where the government has said, no, this one, we're not okay with this application denied, essentially. They get denied. They get vetted. If they're found that they've done things that make us unsafe, they don't come here. And I think that part of the process, at least on the side of our safety, has worked very well, just per the fact that we have not had an incident.
Right. And I want to back that up, too. There's a case that I've been working on, and there is a veteran involved, and there's actually three veterans involved. And I've had to say, look, this guy, according to the U.S. government, there's derogatory information on this individual. He's not coming. He's not coming. And the veterans keep saying, oh, but no, that's not true. He could have been, they think he was set up. They claim they have proof he was set up. And I'm like, he's not coming. I mean, the vetting, I don't want to call it extreme. It's necessary. But it's there and it's in place.
And it's significant.
And it's significant.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, so a couple of points before we listen to Mabubula's story here. Let me just ask you, Ellen, when Senator Vance says, okay, for, in his words, the good ones, which, let me back up and take Nick's point here. When Nick says, sure, I'm sure the CIA has evidence that someone somewhere posed as an interpreter and did harm or tried to do harm. As a journalist, we could probably write a story every single day of the year. And this is what Tim Miller was saying on the Bulwark podcast. This is what Tom Nichols was saying this week. If you want to write a story about an immigrant, a legal immigrant, who has come to this country and committed a crime, you could do it every day of the year. There's 365 days in the year, and there's millions of people. You can do it in a way that doesn't contextualize anything. We know that the rate of crime among immigrants to this country is lower than the general population, which is logical. Mm-hmm. People don't want to make a journey, make an effort, and then end up losing all of that. So it's logical. But you can find people who've committed crimes. It happens. And you could report it every day of the year, and you can convince people it's some sort of scourge or problem. That's not what J.D. Vance is doing here. J.D. Vance is broad brushing this and making it seem like, well, don't believe that SIVs were actually helping us. You know, a lot of them were just, you know, trying to betray us, and we can't bring them here. And yeah, there were some good ones, and we can help them, but we don't. So he's broad brushing it, and there's not evidence of that. There's just not. There's not evidence that SIVs have come here and have caused harm. There is not. Having said all of that, I want to ask our guests two things. Ellen, first, does this kind of rhetoric seek to injure this kind of program going forward, no matter what happens? Because the American public, who hasn't served, which is still most of us, doesn't really know much about the SIV program, absent getting a chance to hear from Mabubula and yourself and the board and others. Does this rhetoric hurt?
Absolutely. I was just up in Maine to our family property for 3 weeks and listening to folks up there who don't believe that Afghans should be allowed in the country, and like this was their war, their battle,
and they shouldn't be allowed here.
And I have said this before. What I am being told is that I don't know who I am resettling. That's what I'm told, and I'm like, I absolutely do know who I'm resettling. And
how do you hold it together when you hear that? By the way,
In this one conversation I had in this little market in Andover, Maine, you know, this person said to me, well, I know someone who served over there, and that's what he told me. And I said, I have two veterans on my board, and I know what they tell me. And I also am in meetings now monthly with people from the State Department. This is, you know, again, no one wants a 9/11. No one wants a terrorist attack. You know, we're not going to let the bad guys in our country. So,
By the way, can I just? Yes. What J.D. Vance is saying is exactly what the Taliban wants us to say. Mm. This is their tactic, right? They want us to be scared. They want us to live in fear. That's why 9/11 happened in the first place, right? Why do something like 9/11 so that the country says, oh my God, we're scared, go into isolation mode. Keep them all out, lock our borders. That's their goal. And he's pushing. Like, the Taliban does not want their interpreters coming here. They want them dead, right? They're traitors. He is saying exactly what they want him to say.
And to touch on that, yeah, exactly what Nick said, that's true. I mean, think about it. If you have a potentially vice president of this country that's taken in a bunch of personnel for the past 20 years have helped kind of diminish your agenda, which is SIVs to the Taliban, and then all of a sudden this big country, the U.S., isn't taking them in anymore. Now they can just go on a killing spree. This finding them gives them plenty of time to do exactly what they want to do, which is just find them all and kill them.
The second part of that is I'm going to read again what Vance said at a rally in Pennsylvania a few weeks ago. He said, quote, just because they allegedly helped, allegedly is doing a lot of work in this sentence, by the way. Quote, just because they allegedly helped us doesn't mean you have to let them come to Pittsburgh. Maybe some of them should go to other countries. Maybe we should help some of them stay in their own country, end quote. All right. So, Nick, before the program, you used the word debt, that you served, you were doing the door knocking, and you saw the sacrifice that Afghans have been making, and you feel we owe a debt to them. J.D. Vance is saying, even if we do, that doesn't mean they have to come here. Send them to other countries or maybe find a way to help them if they're going to stay in Afghanistan. What do you say to that?
Yeah. So first, just as clarification, we didn't knock very often when we went on raids. They were a little bit more direct than that. But
The comedian Shane Gillis has quite an illustrated way of describing
that.
Mostly it's not knocking. It's doors. Right. It's walls coming down. But anyway,
right. Yeah. Again, I would go back to the concept. And you know, anyone is welcome to say whatever they want about this, especially if you're running as a political candidate. J.D. Vance was not walking through the mountains on patrols with these SIVs. He did not see what I and the rest of the Marines and soldiers that I fought alongside saw. And this is critical to the future of our foreign policy and our foreign conflicts that we engage in other countries. The first thing we do when we go to another country, we actually have the Army – the entire all of Army Special Forces is the foundation of why they exist, is to work with natives of other countries to help in our fight and why we're there. It's what the Green Beret was made to do. It's the first thing we do. When we went to Afghanistan, when we got boots on the ground right after 9/11, the CIA made contact with the warlords in Afghanistan of the Northern Alliance and said, we can't do this without you. And of course, their reasonable response should be, why should we help you? If we help you, we'll be hunted. Our families will be hunted. And we convinced them to do it. And at the time, they heard thousands and thousands of times from our military, you'll be taken care of. Don't worry about it. We'll make sure that you're taken care of. And that is a bargain that we made with them. And no difference than if I shake someone's hand to make a deal here or sign a contract here. We signed a contract with them. And I think it just exhibits pure cowardice on our part if we say, well, there's a little bit of risk involved with bringing them here. Doesn't matter. They stood shoulder to shoulder with us. They died alongside of us. And then they're hunted after we left. We absolutely have a significant debt to them.
But can we help them in other ways, as Senator Vance says, without bringing them here?
I mean, sure, yeah, it's very easy to say they should go to other countries. Well, what if those other countries have the same exact issues that we have? Our country is the country that led the fight there. We're the ones that were attacked in 9/11. We're the ones that asked for their help. We owe the debt. And as far as other ways, okay, sure. You might think of some other ways that we can be helpful to them, but the only significant way that we're going to be helpful to them is by bringing them here. Otherwise, they're living in hell right now.
Sean Kellis, can we help them if they're going to stay in Afghanistan? As Vance says, maybe we can come up with some way to help them and say, you're going to stay there, but we'll help you out.
I don't see any possible way to help them. If they're stuck in Afghanistan, what can we possibly do? Afghanistan's completely controlled by the Taliban. I mean, Ellen's mentioned it before, probably on the show in years past, talking about the SIV program. But right now, if they're approved for SIV application, they're in a hotel that's protected and secured by the Taliban. The Taliban controls everything. So with that being said, if all these SIVs that we all of a sudden don't want to bring here are just stuck there, oh, we'll help you out. There's no way we can help them out right now, because the Taliban's the one that controls everything. There's nothing we can possibly do.
So that comment is meaningless, you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, if I were an SIV right now and America said, hey, we're going to help you while you're in Afghanistan, the first thing I'm going to say is, no, don't. Don't do anything further.
Because that calls attention.
You're right.
In fact, that's a great point. You know, helping them is helping them leave.
Right.
Otherwise, they're in more danger. Anything else you want to add on how we can help without bringing them here?
I will say that our NATO partners have brought their interpreters to their countries. So, you know, they've been going to Australia, France, you know, Germany. So everyone's doing their part, but this was our war.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to the team from Keeping Our Promise, Ellen Smith, the executive director, board members, Nick Stefanovich, Sean Kellis are with us. And we are talking a lot about what Senator Vance has said, but, you know, maybe just in the effort of fairness, just so you understand, if you're just meeting Ellen for the first time on this program, Ellen doesn't hold back, and Ellen has been deeply disappointed at times with really all administrations. What has bothered you the most about the way the Biden administration has handled SIVs?
What infuriated me is when the Biden administration came in and we were saying to our members of Congress and to government officials, we're not going to get the people out in time. Like, if you just look at how many flights could leave Kabul airport on any given day.
Yeah.
We were not going to get everyone out. And there was this theory that, well, you didn't want to take a lot of people out in the beginning because you didn't want to destabilize the government. But everyone saw, and we've talked about it on this show, how these smaller cities were starting to fall to the Taliban,
very
and we
quickly,
still
yeah.
weren't getting them out. However, I will say, you know, under the Trump administration, I just looked at my numbers. So we only had 32 families in 2017 that we resettled here in Rochester. And that was 105 people, 13 families in 2018 when the Trump administration was trying to cut the SIV program. And what they did was they cut the staff. And in 2019, we only had 62 individuals that we resettled. The Biden administration did ramp things up. They were also under a court order to do so, because the government was sued by the International Refugee Assistance Project, because under the law, it's to take 9 months for an application to be completed, and it's taking 4 to 6 years for these applications to be completed.
Yeah,
so, I mean, wild. We are seeing an influx, obviously, and there's more people coming to Rochester than we have the ability to help right now. And the other problem I just saw was when I was listening to President Biden talk during the evacuation, he would always say, we're getting all of our U.S. citizens out. He would never say SIVs. He never said it. Green card holders, citizens, and there were citizens who were married to Afghans who couldn't get out, and they didn't want to leave their family.
But Ellen, I think some people, maybe Senator Vance, would say, He shouldn't put SIVs in the same category as Americans.
Well, I mean, they're granted legal permanent residency status upon arrival. I mean, we view them as our newest Americans, and, you know, they will become American citizens. So,
okay. So, by the way, how many total families or individuals do you know? How many you've helped over the years? How many have resettled
here? We're up to almost 2,000. This year, I think we're around 230 individuals so far this year.
How are they doing? I know it's a mixture.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not any one way to describe
yeah,
it, but in general.
We've had to cut some of our services that I think decreases the amount of help we can give. So our Wheels to Work car grant program, which has been very successful over the years, we had two major foundations funding that, and they're not funding that program anymore. So that's unfortunate.
Does that mean that you need cars or you need drivers? You need transport?
We need cars.
You need cars.
Yeah. And we do take donated vehicles. We had grants that are now coming to the end to pay for driving lessons, you know, so our guys could get to work. And the other issue is our costs have gone up for housing. So we saw a significant increase in the cost of housing in January when HUD raised its reimbursement rates for housing. So a house that we could rent for $1,400 in December of last year all of a sudden went up to like $1,850 a month, which is another story on Section 8. But so we're having to pay these rents and help these families out, pay the difference between their TANF benefit that they're legally allowed to have for 180 days. And so, unfortunately, other things have had to be been cut in our program.
When did you meet the gentleman next to you here?
We brought him here 3 months ago through the generosity of the community, donating frequent flyer miles to Miles for Migrants. And we were able to get him here from Rwanda. No, India. India, I'm sorry. There's another family from Rwanda. Using frequent flyer miles
that
were donated.
People so people can just donate their miles?
They can donate their miles by going to miles4migrants.org.
I think that might be new. And if you want to learn more about the organization and what they need, keepingourpromise.org.
Yes.
Mahbubala Amirzai is an Afghan native who has now been in the Rochester area on a special immigrant visa, an SIV. 3 months now, is that right?
Yes, at least 3 months.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. Thank you very much.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the work that you did in Afghanistan with Americans?
Yes, sure. Back in Afghanistan, I served the U.S. government for 7 years. And during the 7 years, just our goal was to fight for the freedom all the time. This was our announcement. And we did it. And also, I would like to say about the enrollment of interpreters, like when they were getting enrolled to like U.S. Army or U.S. Marine Corps, there was a like security procedure that they were testing that is he a good guy or not. Yes. And after that, we did like for 7 years, like we fought for the freedom. And we tried our best, and at that, like on 2012, I started getting threats by the bad guys that I'm helping the U.S. government. And at the end of the 2012, I started to quit my job. And on 2013, I went to India. At least, cause of me and my family should not get hurt. So I was there in India for 11 years. And after 11 years, my SIV got processed. And this year, on June 6th, I arrived to the United States. Yes.
When's the first time you heard the word Rochester?
That was like on January 2024, this year.
Okay.
Yes.
And were you in touch, Ellen, with him in those 6 months or so?
Yeah, through a friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes.
It's amazing how many people Ellen just knows, and it's really remarkable because this community has really grown and become quite vibrant. You came here in June, and what has the summer been like for you?
It's very good, yes. And also, like I was there in India for 11 years, and during this 11 years, we were not allowed to work like officially by like
The Indian government?
They were not allowing us because we were refugees there.
Okay.
Like officially, the refugees were not allowed to work. And even like the United Nations office over there, they were not helping the immigrants over there.
You wanted to work?
Yeah. But still, I was working in the shops, like in a chemistry. Mm-hmm. And the latest job that I did over there, I was working in a pharmacy factory. I was doing there like for 2 or 4 years, mm-hmm. 2 to 4 years. And before that, I was working with the United Nations office there in India, like the UNHCR, that they were also serving for immigrants over there.
Was your whole family there?
No, just at the very start, I was alone there. And later on, I got married there.
You got married there. Okay.
Yeah, I got married there, and now I have my wife and 2 of my kids.
Okay. Are they here in Rochester?
Right now, they're with me in Rochester.
How are they doing?
They're doing good. Thank you very much.
Are you working here?
Not now. Not yet.
Okay.
Yes.
What do you want to do?
Just I will see, like, as I have the experience. Like, I was an interpreter back in Afghanistan, and also before that, I was working in one of the airlines, Qamir Airlines, like a local airlines in Afghanistan. And in India, when I arrived in India, so I was working with the UNHCR office, and I did it for 2 years there. So it's all my experience. Like I was helping the other people, like not only the Afghans there. There were other immigrants from different countries that were coming to India to be recognized as a refugee. So I was helping them over there. Yes.
If you are able to get the kind of work that you want here, what does the next 5-10 years for you look like here? What do you expect to be doing?
First of all, as I have like the experience that I have for my backgrounds, like from the time that when I was working with the airlines till now, so I will have a job over here. Like I will look for a job over here to have from that experience, and at the same time, I would like to go to college, like computer science, and I will get educated more, and I will have my documents. Later on, I will go for the next job.
As you know, and as Ellen mentioned, mm-hmm. there's now a growing community of SIVs, of Afghan families here, and there are in a number. Naturally, there are kind of groupings. I think Fairport, among others, you'll find.
Honeyway Falls.
Mm-hmm. And have you been able to find community here with other Afghans?
No, till now, no. I haven't found any other communities.
No. You're in a community of Afghans right now.
Well, I am.
Yes.
Yes.
So you're spending some time with other Afghans.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes. And how helpful has that been for you?
That's very good, because we have many people right now, especially in Barbary Drive that we are living over there. Mm-hmm. They have they're living there for 2 years, 4 years, or 1 year, and they have their own experience. And mostly when am I having any question regarding something, so I'm trying to reach Ellen or the KOP, but that's like I cannot call them all the time to ask any questions. So I can go to those Afghans that already there in Rochester and in Barbary Drive.
Okay. Yes. And how has the reception been? How would you say the greater community, not just the Afghan community, but Rochester people in general, how have they treated you?
They treated me very well, and I'm really happy. And I'm really happy over here that everyone, they're respecting each other. And that's what I'm looking for. So I want to be respected, and I want to respect everyone. And this is for human being to respect each other.
We're talking to Mahbubullah Amirzai, who's an Afghan native, been in Rochester on a special immigrant visa for about 3 months. Mahbubullah's story is, it's a unique story, but of course, but it is the kind of story that Ellen and many others have brought to us over the years, where someone serves the American government, American military, chooses to take a very risky assignment, could be interpreting, translating, could be doing other services, and then eventually they know that they are in danger, their family is in danger. The Taliban has made that clear, and they leave. So for Mahbubullah, he left in 2012, finally able to come to the United States in the summer of 2024, and now the goal is to be here. Do you have a hope that in the future Afghanistan would be a place that you could go back to if you wanted to? Do you think that will be possible?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I hope that Afghanistan again should be peaceful, and the government should respect the education. Like, they should allow the people, like, at least they should respect the education, because right now, they're not respecting the education. They'll keep saying that whoever they fought with us in the last 20 years, mm-hmm. so they will be in the chairs, in any positions. They're not allowing the other people to work, even if they're educated.
I want to hit one other point here, which is maybe even unfair to ask Mahbubullah, but look, you see this presidential campaign, you hear the political rhetoric, and you heard what Senator Vance said. He does not think that there should be, frankly, people like you who've served the American government as SIVs. He does not think this SIV program should be as robust as it is. It's possible that he would want to shut it down if Donald Trump and Vance are elected. And I think similar to the kind of conversation about immigration writ large that we have, Senator Vance has said that we should be encouraging more Americans to have bigger families. We shouldn't be relying on immigration, and that there is a danger to culture. There is a danger to our way of life. And, you know, and then I meet you and I think, I kind of wish you were my neighbor.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And is it difficult to hear that, or mostly has your experience not been, you know, negative? What is that like?
Yes, it is. Because at the very start, I say that when the procedure at the time, at that time, when an interpreter was getting enrolled with the U.S. government over there, there was a process. Like, first of all, a person over there at that time, they must be educated. After that, there was a process, like a security process, that they were processing him, that is he a good guy or a bad guy? Like, they were not enrolling anyone. Yes. And we were all, like, happy at that time until now. Anytime I will fight for freedom.
Well, thank you for the service that you have provided.
Thank you.
You know, I know that I, and I think I can speak for almost all the listening audience who is grateful for that kind of work. You risked your life, and here you are. And yeah, I said at the top of the hour, Mabubula, that there's this reporting that the Taliban has put out new laws about women and girls in particular. They are becoming more extreme. It is not a surprise, but what do you think about when you think about your friends or family back in Afghanistan under the Taliban? What is life like for them? What are your hopes for them?
As of now, as I have my parents back there, mm-hmm. and also one of my sister, always I am thinking about them. How can I get them out from there? Because all the time my sister is a teacher over there, and all the time they're getting questions by the Taliban. They're trying to set them in their home. Yeah, they're trying to make them to resign from their job and set in their home. And my sister is teaching lower class, fourth class. Mm-hmm. And as of now, they can teach till class 6 in Afghanistan, not over that. It is very tough right now. Yes.
Your kids are young?
Yes.
How are they? Are they in school?
My daughter is in school right now, mm-hmm. and she is 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And my son is young right now. Yes.
Little guy.
Yeah, little guy.
A lot of work.
No.
It's a lot of work. Talking to Mabubula Amirzai, who has been in Rochester since June on the special immigrant visa. You hear SIV here. And, you know, Ellen, at some point, these stories, you're the person who, amazingly, these stories don't blend together. I feel like you know everyone so individually, and you have such admiration for their individual stories. They're all stories of sacrifice in some way, though.
I've read all of their letters of recommendation. Right? And I just feel like I owe it to those American citizens who wrote those letters of recommendation saying that these people deserve to be our new Americans. And I take that very seriously. And, you know, this whole thing started, Evan, with helping one U.S. Army captain in Syracuse, New York, with his two interpreters. And it's as healing for our military to help their interpreters as it is for the interpreters themselves to come here. Mm. The other thing I want to point out to the audience is the current SIV program is scheduled to end in December 2025, where no more applications will be taken. And there's a debate right now on whether or not it should be extended. And I do want to say that the problems we're facing with some of the cases now is literally finding the Americans that they worked with, because emails or phone numbers may have changed. And so we try to find people using LinkedIn and Google to help these guys get their letters of recommendation to the government. And so that's like one of the stumbling blocks in this program. And the other thing is, and I'm going to put this out there, I just think that the SIV program should be an American policy. I mean, it shouldn't end if we can get every single Afghan out of Afghanistan who served with us. I just think that we need a commitment to our allies that should they place their lives at risk, that if they find themselves at risk, that we will give them safe haven.
As an American policy around the world?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, how many KOPs are out there in different communities around the country?
We're the only one that I know of that has this model.
That has this model.
Yes.
There must be other – I mean, there's different charity organizations.
Right. There are the refugee resettlement organizations mm-hmm. like we have here in Rochester. I just feel that if someone served the United States in any capacity, that they deserve a special level of recognition that we can give to them and more support. One of the things that I really want to focus on is getting guys into skilled trades. With the other resettlement agencies, it's 90 days, you're done. You've got to have a job no matter what it is. I'd rather take more time with our families and say, I'm going to help support you going through a program like mechanics or the electrician's training program at OASIS, the Office of Adult Education Services. I want to take that little extra time to help them build that foundation, that solid foundation for their future here in Rochester.
Let me ask the board members across the table what they make of Mabubula's story. And Nick Stefanovich, what comes to mind for you when you hear this story?
My interpreters.
You think about your interpreters, yeah.
Yeah. They were, you know, my interpreter on my final deployment to Afghanistan, we called him Little Mac. And I remember the conversations that I had with him just about how he saw America. And I can remember one conversation like it was yesterday. It was in the middle of the night. I was on security near a gate, and he was sitting next to me, and he asked me what it was like to swim in a pool. And as a 21-year-old, I was shocked to hear somebody ask me what it might be like to swim in a pool. Because I did that when I was five, you know. Yeah. It's I never took that for granted. And it's one of the greatest lessons I took out of Afghanistan was how great this country is and how fortunate I was to come from this country. But I also saw firsthand the risk that he was taking. And I saw how he had to live, how he had to hide his face. Anytime we ever came, we went into a village or we went on a raid, his face had to be hidden. And he always had concern for his family. And thankfully, we did get him out. And then thanks to Ellen and Congressman Morelli's office, his family out during the withdrawal.
Are they in our area now?
No, they're in California.
Are you in touch?
Yes. Yeah. We always stay in touch.
Oh,
he's no different to me than any of my other Marine brothers. And that's why when County Executive Bello and I sat down a few years ago, and this was just really, really important to me that it be acknowledged that these men who fought alongside us need to be respected in the same ways that we are. And that's why we sent that statement out to the county that at least per the county, we want our community to see men like Mabubula the same way that they see me, as someone who fought for the U.S. In that country. And hopefully some start to do. We still have organizations that won't. One of them, even having been at the press conference, they still get turned away at. But that's my goal here, is to convince people, you know, I'm sure I'm not going to convince J.D. Vance, but people who might follow some of the things that he says, that it's BS. That these are men who know different from our sons and daughters who went over there, fought for this country. And Mabul has said it two or three times now. And I think hearing the statement that simply, I'm always willing to fight for freedom, that's something that we encourage here in America, right? It's special to us. It's part of our tradition. And those are the people that we're wanting to come here.
Sean, just over a minute here. Final thoughts from you on that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think his story is inspiring. You have a man who fought for freedom of his country and helped us fight for our freedom. And so with that, hearing a story of how he was in India for years, just struggling to survive, you know, working, even though he wasn't technically allowed to, And finally, with the U.S. government finally paying it back to him of his 7 years as an interpreter, we're finally giving him what we promised back in the beginning. And I think that's just inspiring. I wish we could just keep doing this for everybody.
All right, about 40 seconds, Ellen. What else do you need next here?
Right now we're under a challenge grant, so if anyone would like to donate and go to our website, keepingourpromise.org, and hit that Donate Now button. We have 10 days to raise about $15,000, and we're going to get a $50,000 challenge grant if we can do that. So that would be very helpful.
Barbara writes to say, thank you for doing another Keeping Our Promise story. I've been supporting an Afghan family here for 2.5 years. I love them, have learned so much from them. We need to get all SIVs here soon. That's from Barbara. The website to learn more, Ellen?
KeepingOurPromise.org.
You know, I always say that I can't tell our listeners to do anything but support WXXI, but you know how to support KOP if you choose to do that. And that need has only grown because of people like Ellen and Nick and Sean and the needs of people and families like Mabubala's. And welcome. And it's just great to talk to you, Mabubala. Great
Thank
to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That's Mabubala Umerzai, an Afghan native, part of this vibrant and growing community of SIVs here in the Rochester area. Ellen Smith, Executive Director of Keeping Our Promise. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Always good to talk to you. Sean Kellis and Nick Stefanovich, board members, thanks for making time to talk to us here, gentlemen.
Thanks, Evan.
We've got more connections coming up in a moment.